Okay, the topic of Gneivas Das is a huge one as far as how we behave and as far as how we define ourselves and as far as how we present ourselves. And it's a topic which you can glean from many different places in Shas. And if you want to come up with a comprehensive theory, so there are many, many Gemaras that you could quote where a question could come up, where a lesson is conveyed, and it all goes to basic honesty, sometimes to teach us something about honesty, and sometimes to present a question about how could it be? Someone said such and such, someone presented himself in this way and that way. And to get a comprehensive picture of what it means to be honest and to fulfill the halachic standards for honesty, you really have to get a good view of all of Shas. And of course, to present yourself as if you know all of Shas is one of the Gneivas Das questions that we'll talk about. But it's true that in order to really get the full picture, there are many different sources that need to be brought together and need to be analyzed. And we'll see how some of that comes up. But first and foremost, for our purposes, there is a Gemara that addresses it head-on, that addresses the concept of Gneivas Das, and it's found in our Masechta. And if you had a chance to see the Makoros, so I gave you essentially, there's a full blot, there's a full daf where this comes up, and it's in a somewhat complicated context. So I'm going to focus on the key lines and summarize the rest, but we'll extract the lines that are most relevant for us to try to figure out what it is exactly we're talking about. And the context of the Gemara, which starts from the Mishnah on the very bottom of Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis and extends for our purposes to the bottom of Tzadi Dalet Amud Beis, the context is talking about you're doing business with the general population. You're doing business with Jews and with non-Jews, and that involves selling meat. And there's a lot of interesting questions to consider about the challenges of selling meat in a market that involves Jews and non-Jews buying and selling. And that has many complexities which we're not going to focus on completely, but we're interested in this one aspect of it, that the Gemara talks about whether you have to make it clear if you are selling an animal to a non-Jew, you're selling a dead animal. So if the animal is not kosher, seems that one is obligated to make that clear to the purchaser, even though the purchaser is not Jewish and doesn't have to care about kosher food. Right? So we're not talking about a standard issue of kashrus and lifnei iver. We're not talking about the concern necessarily that it's going to be eaten by somebody who is prohibited to eat it. That's an issue too, which is relevant to some of the Gemaras here. But here, this is a different focus, separate from that, that we're not necessarily concerned that somebody's going to eat something he's not allowed to eat. Even if that's not the issue, still, you have to make sure that the purchaser knows that it's not kosher. And what do we mean by not kosher? So there are many different possibilities. It's interesting that here, in the context of the parak, the Gemara is talking about not the most obvious kind of example, where you have an animal that hasn't had the gid hanasha removed. You know that Jews are prohibited from eating the gid hanasha, the sciatic nerve. Maybe we will have an opportunity to talk about that prohibition a little bit. We'll maybe back into it a little bit later. But it's an interesting kind of example here because it means that the animal is essentially kosher and can be made more kosher. So it's not disqualified in any permanent way. It means that you haven't removed the gid hanasha yet, and somebody who doesn't know that may think that they can consume it straight and they'll end up eating the gid hanasha as well. While other examples, if you talk about an animal that's a trefa, or an animal that is a nevela, an animal that hasn't been shechted properly, So at that point, there's nothing that can be done to fix it. The animal, once it died on its own, or once it's a trefa, so that's completely trefa in an objective sense. Here it's an interesting example. It's a question of whether the process of removing the gid has happened or not. So to give the animal to a non-Jew who wouldn't have a halachic problem in eating it, nonetheless, seems like you have to make it clear that there is a issue here, that it's not prepared for kosher consumption. So why is that? Now, why is that important? If it's not a concern that he's going to eat something he's not allowed to eat, so why is that important that that be made clear? Anyone want to help me out? Why does that matter? Why should it be that he's got to know about this? So the Gemara picks this up, among other explanations. So the line here that appears in the name of Shmuel, it is about a quarter of the page down on Sadidalet Amud Aleph. So one possibility is, yes, maybe it's a kashrus concern, maybe he will give it to a Jew and then the Jew's not going to realize. But separate from that, the Gemara gives another approach. E bayis ema, here this is 3, 6, about 8 lines down at the end of the line. E bayis ema, mishum de kaganiv le lidaite. That somehow you are stealing his das. And that's wrong. De amar Shmuel, aser lignov das abrios. V'afilo daito shel oved kochavim. That one is not permitted to be gonev das, even that of an idolater. So, how would you translate the term gnevis das? How would you translate it literally? How would you translate it in this context? What do you think the Gemara is getting at? What's the concern? And want to take a stab at trying to translate it?
To mislead.
Okay, so it certainly seems like it means some type of misleading. Right? So, does that fit with a literal translation of the words, or is that the context?
So, I think the most literal would be to steal, like, knowledge.
Okay, to steal knowledge would seem like a literal translation. And it's interesting, by the way, in the modern world, with some of the issues that we deal with, if I were to say there's a prohibition of gnevis das, and I were to ask you, what does it mean? So there are a lot of modern contexts, a lot of modern applications that you might think I'm talking about, right? Just to translate the words literally, so especially in a modern context, how might you think that means? What might you think that applies to? Yeah, Rafi?
You mean stealing his ability, like an opportunity to gain certain like knowledge, like
an opportunity to gain. Now it's interesting. That's also a possibility, but there are some other even more direct types of activities that are hotly debated. I keep emphasizing the modern world because there's some contexts that may be particularly relevant. Is that a raised hand? Is that Benjamin?
Yeah, like copyright.
Copyright. Right?
Yeah.
Where are you from, Benjamin?
Teaneck.
Teaneck, yeah. A fine place. What street?
I'm at the end of Winthrop by Romer.
Okay, a fine street. I can't wait from here. It's a little too far, but all right, good to see you. So that would sound like an issue, right, that we're talking about a copyright violation, that somebody has das. Maybe das means intellectual output. Right? Das means somebody's creativity. And maybe by stealing it, I am appropriating it. I am somehow making use of someone else's intellectual property. And that's a complex topic in halacha. It's really a whole separate discussion. I'm happy to talk about it if we find a setting for it. But really, it's a whole other sugya, which comes from many different directions and has many different complications to it, but it's just interesting. It would sound like that's a literal application of gnevis das. And to be precise, in some of the contemporary halachic literature, you do find that gnevis das is used in that context. But in the Talmudic context, here in Chulin, it means something else. Although it's not completely unrelated. So the idea of Gnevas Das could have referred to something like intellectual property, could have referred to spying, right? Das as in intelligence, information, right? We use the word intelligence in English to mean gathering information in the context of espionage and the like. The CIA is the Central Intelligence Agency, so stealing Das could also mean spying. It could have a number of connotations in its literal translation, and in the halakhic literature you do find that a little bit. But classically, Talmudically, it seems to mean something else, and it does seem, like Ari is saying, to mean something in the area of deception. That's clearly a theme here. But even with deception, so we need to sharpen it a little bit. It means a certain type of deception, and it may actually come back in a backwards way and relate to the copyright issue. What type of deception are we talking about here? How is this deception relevant in this case? If you're going to give the non-Jew food that is not kosher for Jews and it's not relevant to him, why is there an issue of deception there? Any thoughts? Why should that matter to him? Yeah, Ari? Oh, sorry, was Ari up first? Chesklover? Ari?
I would say that maybe in a legal or market setting, there's some legally set standard for meat you get from a Jew, and to give that non-Jew meat that is otherwise not up to that standard would be to rob him of the standard to which he is rightfully earned in a legal setting.
So you mean maybe you're misrepresenting the product? And so that's an interesting consideration. The problem is, and it doesn't mean that's not correct, it's something that we have to try to figure out, is that if I'm misrepresenting an item and I'm not providing you with what you're entitled to, so then that should be a different aveira, right? That's essentially fraud, right? If I am selling you something and it's not what it's supposed to be, so that is either we call mekach tos, that you're not buying the product you think you're buying, or maybe it's more an issue that the price is not appropriate because it's not the quality. So that's something we call in halacha, I can use the chat thing as a blackboard here, that's something we call ona. That is essentially fraud. So we have to figure out why that's not what we're talking about, because that's a different sugya. So somehow it's got to fall short of that. Yechezkel, did you have a comment before?
I was going to say something similar.
Okay. So that concern seems to be an issue, but it can't be the whole story here. So if you look at Rashi, so Rashi explains, and here there's a phrase in Rashi, which if you see throughout the Amud, that Rashi uses this phrase at least three times. And that gives us a little bit of an insight as to what the phrase Gnevas Das means. Now, it's interesting. If you got the Mar Makomos through Mori, so there was a typo that I only corrected later, so that's why I'm saying that it would have come, Mori got the typo version. Normally, I try just to keep you on your feet with having at least one typo a day, the TOD, the typo of the day, just to make sure you're paying attention. But one typo that was in the original version is I put there Rashi Dibur HaMaschil, and I don't think I got around to putting what Rashi it was. So I could tell you that that's because it's several Rashis, and I want you to look at all of them, so I purposely left it blank. But that would be Gnevas Das, because that would be representing that I had this clever plan, and really it was just a mistake. So here I am being honest and telling you it was a mistake, but it would be a good example of Gnevas Das, because if you look at the Rashi, so what is Rashi? Mishum de Gonev Daito. So it says, Rashi, what's the issue? Gonev Daito, this is around a little before the middle of the page. Mishum de Gonev Daito. De Oved Kochavim, you are being Gonev, the Das of the Oved Kochavim. Kasover, she Yisrael's the Ovo Ma'od. That what does this guy figure? He thinks that this Jew who's providing him with this kosher, specially prepared meat must really love him a lot. Shatikna v'tarachba litol gida ad sheniris la'atmo, that he put in a lot of effort to make this animal kosher, to extract the yid and to make it ready for him to eat. Right, nireis in this sense means acceptable, means kosher. At shenireis la'atzmo until it was kosher for himself. V'achar kach nosnalo. And still, after all that, he gave it to this guy. He gave it to this non-Jewish man. But what's the truth? V'hulo notlo. He did not actually do any of that. So it's not the actual truth. So here's the key line. This is the phrase that appears a couple times. V'nimtza machzik lo tova chinam. And what emerges is that he has been machzik tova from this guy. He has gotten his goodwill. He's gotten his good opinion, or perhaps gratitude in this context, or he's created a warm, fuzzy feeling for nothing. Chinam, meaning for free. Now, it's interesting. We could argue, and maybe it's worth it, about how exactly to translate the word chinam, because it might be relevant for our purposes, that chinam literally translates as free. And maybe that's not a perfect translation, because, let's say, for example, as we're heading towards the summer, so hopefully this whole crisis will be resolved as soon as possible, but hopefully also Mashiach will come and we won't have Tisha B'Av either. So the one Jewish festival we want to get canceled this year is Tisha B'Av. So we're hoping to undo that situation. But we know, what do Chazal tell us? What's keeping us in Gullus? What Aveira is it that makes Tisha B'Av still an issue? What's our big problem? Sinas Chinam. Right? There's that word again, Chinam. So what does chinam mean in that context? So it's often translated in English, baseless hatred, as if it's really free for nothing. So the problem is, that seems a little extreme, because that's essentially psychotic. Why do you hate people for no reason? Is that really what we're talking about? That we're in Gullus because we just completely irrationally hate people? So presumably not. Presumably what we mean is that it's really, instead of baseless, we should call it unjustified. So people have reasons why they don't like each other. The point is that it's not enough to justify hating them. So the sinna is a unwarranted reaction to something smaller than that. So chinam probably doesn't mean completely free. It means that it's not justified. It's not enough. So here also, the reason just bringing that up is because it's a matter of degree. So maybe this individual should feel some appreciation for you, but not that much. And apparently, even in a question of degree, even when it's not just up or down, is he going to feel gratitude to you or not, but it's a question of more gratitude versus less gratitude, more appreciation versus less appreciation, maybe that's itself also significance. That's something to pay attention to and to be attuned to. So, machzik tov b'chinam. So here, what this Jew did was he created goodwill, he created a positive impression, and it's not justified. So apparently that's the issue. That's Gnevas Das. So the deception, yes, that is a good shorthand for what we're talking about, but it's a deception of a certain type. And it's a deception which profits the person doing the deceiving, and that's probably an important detail also. Right? The fact that you are getting something out of this, you're getting the gratitude, the goodwill, the admiration of the person who is being deceived. And that is apparently a prohibition. It's a prohibition across the board. Yisrael, how you doing?
I'm good.
Okay.
Is it that the non-Jew is possibly paying more for this kosher meat that he thinks he's getting, and that's also bad to do? Because, like, he may say, since he went through all this preparation, I'll be fine with paying him more. And, like, he doesn't even think about that.
So it's definitely an issue. It's what Ari mentioned before. The problem is that not only is that an issue, but it's so much of an issue that we should know that already. Because once something really affects the actual value of the item, if you're misrepresenting the value and you're getting the wrong payment, so then we're entering into the territory of onah. We're entering into the territory of fraud. So it's going to be true that if you had a chance yet to look at this whole Gemara, so you'll see that there are certain examples in the Gemara that sound like that. And we have to figure out how to interpret them. Because if that's the case, that you're getting the wrong payment, so then that would seem to be a bigger avera, a more obvious avera, so to speak. And it sounds like we're talking about something separate from that. So we're going to have to occupy a space in between deception and actual fraud, and this is somehow going to fall short of that. So we'll talk about this more, but just to skip around in the Gemara for a second, so to highlight one line, which also sounds like it more clearly. So the Gemara has a statement towards the bottom of the page, where the Gemara says, before coming back to this context, the Gemara is going to give a lot of examples. But if you look, the fourth wide line, so in the middle of the fourth wide line, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Lo yimkor adam l'chavero sandal shal mesa, b'chlal shal chayish chuta. That if you're selling shoes, you're selling sandals, and the sandals are made out of leather, so you should not sell a leather sandal that's made out of an animal that died of its own, a mesa, with the implication that it's actually of an animal that was shechted. Why? For two reasons. The second reason the Gemara says is because it is dangerous for some reason, but the first reason is mipnei shemita ehu, because you are fooling the person. You are deceiving the person into thinking it's one kind of leather rather the other. And here Rashi says, Shemitaehu gonev daito. And the question is, what's the issue there? So if you look at Rashi of Sandal, Rashi says, Shalor behema shemesa. This is the leather of an animal that died. Shemesa me'aleh, died on its own. And what's the story? Why do they care? Because ein ora chazak kishel bria shchuta. That it is not, the leather is not as strong, or that's how they assumed, that a healthy animal that was shechted would have stronger leather come from it, and an animal that died on its own is a weaker animal, and the leather is also weaker. So that Gemara especially is the topic of some commentary, because it really seems there that it's an inferior quality product. Right? When we're just talking about kashrus, and the non-Jew doesn't have to keep kosher, so then it's not clear why it should matter to him what he's getting. And that's why we have to explain that it has to do also with the gratitude he's going to feel towards the Jewish person. But from there, we don't necessarily know that the product is considered inferior. But the situation with the sandal, so there it does seem that you are selling a product under a false impression, that you're going to sell it representing itself as a stronger sandal, and really it's a weaker sandal. So why is that not straight out fraud? Why is that a Gnevis Das issue only? The Maharsha raises this question. At the Maharsha on the back of the Gemara raises that question, that it seems like this is a fraud issue. So why is it not fraud? So you'll have to interpret it a different way. Yeah, Ari?
Could you say that the legal, like the threshold to be below like legally penalized or criminal activity of, you know, fraud isn't reached by having this poor material? So it's categorized as a non-criminal fraud, but rather as this quasi-criminal action called Gnevis Das.
Okay, I think you're on the right track, but let's take it even a little bit further. That you're saying that the price differential is not significant. Right, so let's see if we could take that same idea a little further. Benjamin, are you raising your hand?
Yeah, I was going to suggest something else, that why can it not be both?
It could be both, right? It could be both, but then we'd already understand it. Right, so if the Gemara were to tell us, don't pull off a con where you defraud somebody out of $1 million because also it's a Gnevis Das, so we'd say, well, yeah, but I get it already because I'm stealing $1 million. So it sounds like this is something which, especially because the Gemara also throws in the Sakana issue, so it says there's two reasons not to do this. One is it's deceptive, and two, it might be dangerous. So it sounds like it's not also fraud. So is there something else? So I'll take what Ari was saying and just take it a step further, right? That maybe it's not that the price difference isn't so significant, because still we don't want to cheat people out of anything. Right now, when you're talking about legal versus less, I assume you mean within the halachic legal system. Right? So it's true that there are some nuances there. Maybe we'll get to explain that a little bit more. But we wouldn't want to cheat anybody out of a nickel, right? Even out of an insignificant amount, even if it's not actionable. Right? So we know there is a difference in halacha sometimes between that which is allowed and that which is actionable. So if I were to steal a penny from you, right now a penny is worth less than a pruta. A pruta is the minimal halachic value, so it's about 2 cents. So if I were to steal 1 cent from you, so then that's not actionable. Beis Din is not going to get involved to enforce repayment of a cent. But I'm not allowed to do it. I can't steal even a cent. So there is a difference between what's allowed and what's enforceable. So if it were different in price, it shouldn't be okay, even if it's a very little amount. So what the commentaries suggest is that maybe I'm selling it at the lower price. So I am give. Let's say, for argument's sake, let's say kosher sandals made out of the healthy animal. So that would have gone for $10, and the weak animal would have gone for $8. So let's say I were to say I'm selling you this sandal for $8, but by the way, you should know it's from a healthy animal, and it's not really. So what did I do to this guy? How did I hurt him? How did I victimize him? I sold him an $8 sandal for $8. Right. So what did I do wrong then? Paid the right price. Is that a hand up? Gidon? Where are you from, Gidon? Sounds like you're on mute, even though... I'm not hearing sound. I'm not sure why. It's not. Do you have a volume? Now I'm hearing fuzz. Not hearing you. Do you want to try to... I'll try again, yeah? Almost heard something. Want to try to type it in the chat? More. Type it in Morse code. Or use emojis. Oh, it's the same misappropriated friendship as before. Okay, so well put. So it's the same misappropriated friendship as usual as before, meaning that I'm not stealing money from this guy because the sandal's worth $8 and he paid $8. But what am I taking from him? His goodwill. He's going to think, wow, I gave him a good deal. He's going to think that I benefited him out of my kindness or my love for him. And it's not the case. He didn't actually get anything special from me at all. He didn't get cheated. He got the fair deal. But I conveyed to him he's getting something special. Now, that there's a lot of dimensions to explore, and hopefully we'll get to do that a little bit. But it's that line is not clear from the Gemara, right? And it's less clear from the sandal line than it is from our line about the kosher meat. So that's why it needs the commentaries to get involved. But that's the way the Maharsha explains it in the back of the Gemara, and that's the way it's brought in the commentaries to Shulchan Aruch also. As a matter of practical halacha, that's the distinction for us. That if I sell you something for the wrong price, that's onah, that's a different avera. But if I sell you something for the correct price, but I give you the impression that it is worth more and you're a lucky guy, or I'm a nice seller, or I like you, so all of that enters into the area of Gneivas Das. So the Gemara gives a few other examples of what could also be included in this, and I'll just pick out some lines here. And again, on your own, if you could try to look at the whole context of the blot. So basically, just to give you an overview, so over the course of this daf, from all of Tzadi Dalet, so the Gemara goes back a few times to this issue of selling the meat and other issues that could come with it, but makes points about Gneivas Das throughout. And there are two categories of statements that the Gemara gives here. One is the Gemara gives a number of examples of Gneivas Das, and the Gemara gives exceptions also. So we'll try to understand both, but just to pick up first, to select out some of the examples. So the Gemara talks about, so pick up from 6 lines before the wider lines on Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph. So the Gemara quotes Reb Meir. It says, Tanya Hayu Reb Meir Omer, Al Yisarhev Adam L'Chavero Lisod Eitzlo. A person should not push his friend to have a meal with him. V'odeyabo She'eno Soed, and he knows he's not going to do it. He knows that he's a vegetarian and you're offering to take him out for steak. Or he's a steakitarian and you're offering to take him out for salad. Now you know that he's not going to come. V'lo yar v'lo b'tikroves, and you shouldn't offer him gifts in a extreme way, lo yar b'lo. V'odeyabo she'eno mekabel, and you know that he's not going to accept the gifts. Right, so what's the issue there? Where's the Gneivas Das here? Right, what's the concern, Rafi?
Thinks like you're a nice guy.
Thinks like you're a nice guy. And are you a nice guy?
Maybe, but not because of this.
Maybe, but not because of this. Well, that's actually interesting if that's the right answer. Maybe, but not because of this. But here it sounds like you're not really a generous guy, but you find a opportunity to look generous. Because you know that it's free. You know that he's not going to take the food. You know that he's not going to take the gift. So it's no cost to you to offer it and to get the credit for the generosity. So that's Gneivas Das. V'lo yiftach lo chavayos hamuchuros lechenvani. And you shouldn't open up barrels that are sold to a distributor, Ella Imkain Hodio, unless you tell them the story. So what does that mean? That's a little bit of a obscure line. Rashi explains a little bit more, but just to tell you outside what it means, it's that they used to keep wine in big barrels. And when you open up the barrel, it's a step, because now the wine is going to spoil if it's not used soon. So if you have a guest and you want to show that you really are treating him in high style and you're really going all out, so you'll say, okay, I'm opening this new barrel just for you. Because there's a cost to that, because like the more modern day image, for example, if somebody has a bottle of wine that's sealed that they've been saving for a special occasion, and then you come over to their house and they say, okay, now's the special occasion, I'm popping open this wine. So you get a certain amount of social credit for that, a certain amount of social capital for that. But what's the real story? The real story is that you have a deal with a distributor, And you have already sold off all the rest of the wine in this barrel. You haven't given it to him yet, but you've already sold it off. So you're not taking any risk by popping open this barrel. Because right away, by tomorrow, you're going to use it all. But the guest doesn't know that. The guest thinks, oh, wow, look what he's doing for me. He's opening up this barrel just for me, even though he's going to lose all that wine. Wow, he must really love me. So if you create that impression, when the truth is, you're not actually making any grand gesture. So there you have this concern of Gnevis Das. Unless, the Gemara here, unless you tell him. And the Gemara has a few other examples. Say right after that, I'm skipping some lines to come back to some other points. Now I'm skipping to the third wide line. Tana Rabbanu lo yelech adam l'beis ha'avel v'yado login ha'miskashkesh. Somebody shows up at a shiva with a bottle of wine that he wants to give. But he is misrepresenting how much wine is in it. So miskashkesh means it's jiggling around. So it sounds like there's a lot, but really he's just taking a little bit and shaking it to make it sound like a lot. So that's deceptive. He wants to get credit for bringing over a whole bottle, and really it's only a little bit. And you shouldn't fill it up with water. So it looks filled when really it's mostly water. Because you are fooling him. And again, I'm skipping some lines here because of other points we'll come back to. So skip another few lines after the sandal line, which we did already. So the Gemara says, "Lo yishager adam lechavero chavis shel yayin." You shouldn't send over a barrel of wine. V'shemen safal piha, and it's got oil at the top. And here the concern is that they want oil rather than wine, and they're going to think that they have a whole barrel of oil to serve their guests. And it turns out that it's just wine and not the oil they would want. Okay, so those are a number of the examples of Gnevis Das that we have here. So apparently all of these are prohibited, and we have a couple things we're going to have to figure out. So first of all, what do these examples tell us? What kind of picture do they paint? And part of what I skipped in a lot of these lines is the exceptions, because the exceptions, in addition to having a lot of practical aspects we got to figure out, but the exceptions teach us a lot about the nature of the Isser also. So just to try to do things in an organized fashion, so I just selected out for you the lines that tell us what's prohibited, and then we'll come back to the exceptions that the Gemara teaches and the exceptions that we'll see elsewhere. But now let me ask you a fundamental question. The Gemara just keeps saying, usser, 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 can't. What are we talking about? What isser are we talking about? Is this a separate isser? Is this an isser in the Torah somewhere? Is it from somewhere else? Where does a prohibition come from? Any thoughts? What are we talking about? Some application of an existing prohibition? Are we talking about a new idea? Jonathan, where are you from, Jonathan?
Bergenfield, New Jersey.
Bergenfield, New Jersey. That's a fine place.
Yeah. Is it possible it's from Los Igzal?
It's very possible. I mean, we'll have to narrow it down a little bit. But it's possible that it's from something like that. It's possible that it's from Lo Signovu. Right? The difference between Gezel and Geneva, we'll have to try to see if that's relevant here. But your point is essentially, is it an aspect of stealing? Right? That's what you're suggesting. So you could say that. And there are a number of Rishonim that phrase it that way. So I put on the Makoros list the Ritva, just as a sample of a number of Rishonim that have this approach. Maybe we'll discuss a few others as well. But the Ritva is maybe the most prominent among them, the Ritva over here on our daf. So he essentially says it is a violation of Lo Signovu, which is a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. So not the pasuk from the Aseret HaDibros. Why that is, we could talk about separately, but the idea that it's an aspect of stealing, so that is an idea that a number of Rishonim note, and some of them point to a Tosefta. It's a Tosefta in Bava Kamma, which is also on the Makaris list, if you have a chance to take a look at it, where the Tosefta lists off all the different categories of Ganovim, different types of thieves in the world, and the worst of them is the Gonev Das. So it puts the Gnevis Das in the category of stealing. But hold on a minute. But you're not stealing anything. Like in the case of the sandal, so you're giving an $8 sandal for $8. So what are you stealing? Why is stealing appropriate? Right, where is the stealing here? Okay, it's wrong, it's deceptive, but there are other averis that could be. Why would you call it stealing? So, it sounds like what we're saying is that the goodwill that you're getting has a value. That we are putting a recognition on this goodwill, on this appreciation, that it's an asset. It's not a monetized asset. Right? It's not dollars and cents. But who knows? Right? Maybe this guy is going to do me a favor next week because he thinks I did him a favor. Or maybe he won't, but maybe there's just something I get out of him thinking I'm a good guy. So that's something we need to figure out, that to take this approach, that it's a subset of Gneva, we would have to say that this goodwill, this machzik tov that Rashi is referring to, is somehow an asset of value that I am getting. And it's an interesting question, is it an asset because it may lead to something else? So maybe it actually is stealing in a sense of an object, because next week he'll do me a favor and he'll give me something because he thinks he owes me. But it's very indirect because it's a couple steps removed, and maybe that's the issue. Or maybe even without that, maybe just the goodwill is something that we're putting a value on. So that's something to consider. What exactly is being stolen here? There's a couple possibilities. That's something we're going to want to try to keep our eyes open to. So, yeah, that's a possibility. Rafi?
Yeah, I didn't get the oil in the wine case. It seemed to be that once he opens up the barrel and sees that it's wine, so he's no longer going to be so happy with what you gave him.
Right, so that's a great question. That's also something we're going to have to figure out, because in the other examples, so you don't find that they're ever going to necessarily catch on to you, which is itself an important detail. But here, if they're going to catch on, so doesn't that create a whole other issue? And indeed, it's interesting also because the Gemara does segue from that into other concerns, which may be part of it, like the concern that you're going to end up humiliating the person later on when he has guests over and it turns out he doesn't have what he thinks he has. So,
well,
sorry?
It would also be the flip. Now he's going to have the opposite, whatever the opposite of goodwill is.
Bad will. Or bad won't. His guess is the opposite. Right, so where it's definitely going to go in the opposite direction. So the point is well taken. So that example is a little bit complicated. So let's also keep our eyes out for that, what exactly can be gotten from that example. So one question is, if it's Geneva, so then what exactly is the Geneva of? That's something we want to try to keep our eyes out for. So, other than Geneva, what other possibility could it be? Yes, Yonatan. Where are you from, Yonatan?
Riverdale,
welcome. Okay, so what would you say? What is there? What other possibility is there?
I was thinking maybe V'haftar Chakamocha.
Okay, V'haftar Chakamocha, because you wouldn't want to be treated that way. So it could be an extension of V'haftar Chakamocha. That's certainly a reasonable possibility. And when Rabbi Akiva said Zek Klal Gadol BaTorah, he highlighted the fact that the Sefer Achinuch explains that it's a principle that leads to many other Yisurim. So certainly it's included in that umbrella. That's definitely true. Is there another more specific Avera that may also be connected?
It could be some version of Sheker.
Ah, so what about Sheker? Right? So isn't that an issue? Isn't it Stam dishonest? So why don't we just say it's an issue of Sheker? So here you find that that's a possibility too. That some Rishonim, such as Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva, it's also on the Makoros list there, in Shari Gimel, in Kuf Pei Dalet, Rabbeinu Yonah includes it in the category of Sheker. So that seems to be a good candidate also. Maybe this is not any kind of Geneva. And the phrase Genevas Das is a melitza, is an expression. And the larger Aveira that it connects to is something else. So those are two of the strongest possibilities for the source, in addition to the broader V'haftar L'Reicha Kamocha consideration. But to categorize it as a type of Geneva or to categorize it as a type of Sheker are the two most likely possibilities. Just to mention two other possibilities, and then we'll review and we'll continue tomorrow. So one possibility is that it may be connected to another Avera. That there is an Avera of Ona, as we mentioned before, fraud. So that is a pasuk in Parshas Bahar, which is the parsha a few weeks ago, in the end of Sefer Vayikra. So in Parshas Bahar, the Torah tells us there's a prohibition of Ona, that you're not allowed to charge the wrong price. Actually goes in both directions. The seller can't overcharge and the purchaser can't underpay if they're deceiving the other party. So that's an issue of Ona, which is, like we said before, is really a type of stealing money. It's a fraud. But then the Torah there also gives another prohibition of Lo Sonu. You should not afflict. Has it twice. And the Mishnah says over there that the second los onu is onas devarim. Onas devarim, which we normally understand to mean that you shouldn't hurt someone's feelings. That you shouldn't cause some... Onah really comes from the word onah means to afflict or to oppress, possibly from the shoresh ono, or maybe not, but from a Hebrew shoresh more likely, but to cause somebody stress, to cause somebody pain, is what the word onah means. So if I overcharge them, I am oppressing them, I'm afflicting them. So the Torah also says there's a prohibition of onas devarim, that I can't oppress somebody through speech. So that idea of affliction through speech, the Mishnah in Bava Metzia tells us it applies to all kinds of hurtful things you could say. But there are some who suggest that maybe it means something like this, which would actually parallel monetary ona a little more directly. Because if the idea of monetary ona is that I take something from you by giving you the wrong information, right? So I tell you that this sandal is worth $10 when it's only worth $8, and if I were to sell it to you for $10, I'd be stealing those $2. Those $2 I'm getting for nothing. So this is the emotional version of that. I'm creating the impression that I'm giving you something that's worth more. And I'm not taking money, but I'm taking your emotion. I'm taking your goodwill. So maybe this is a subset of Onas Dvarim. So maybe it's included in that pasuk, Lo Sonu. So that gives us three possible Torah sources. There is also a possibility, which is hard to take 100%, so we have to see, that some sources sound like Gnevas Das is an Isser D'Rabbanan, that we're talking about a rabbinic prohibition. It sounds surprising to say that the Torah wouldn't have any objection to deceiving people. So what we have to assume is that we're talking about only certain specific examples here. That the lower level examples, which are not clear deception in the overt intentional sense, maybe there are some rabbinic examples that are added on here. But that the Isser of Gnevas Das in of itself presumably is connected to one of these Torah sources and maybe expanded Midrabanan. And that's something that we'll have to see in future days. So those are some possibilities as to what the source is, but it's not just a technical question. Right? It's not just a question of, well, does it come from this pasuk, does it come from that pasuk? But what we'll start off with tomorrow is we'll see that this goes to defining what the Isser is and how it should be applied, and therefore that's going to affect the details. And it's going to affect the philosophy. So let's just quickly review what we spoke about. So we talked about the fact that the Gemara tells us you should not give a non-Jew meat that's not kosher unless you tell him it's not kosher. And even though we're not afraid that he's going to eat something he's not allowed to eat, which would be the problem if you're giving it to a Jew, but the problem is that you're deceiving him. And even though it shouldn't matter, it's the same thing for him, but Rashi explains that he's going to think that you're giving him something you could eat. And in the specific example of Gidhanasha, something you worked hard to make it edible for you. And he will appreciate you, and that key phrase that Rashi has a few times, Machzik Toiv Bechinam, that he's going to have gratitude for you that you do not deserve, that is not earned. So if that's the case, so what you find here is an interesting prohibition. The Gemara gives a few other examples. Inviting somebody to a meal that you know they're not going to come to, offering gifts you know they're not going to take, giving the impression that you're treating somebody in high style when really that's not what's happening. Apparently in all of those cases, you're getting goodwill that you don't deserve. And we talked a little bit about the fact that some of the examples in the Gemara would sound like you are defrauding people. And we explained, as the commentaries point out, you're not actually charging the wrong price in the end of the day. You are just charging the proper price, but giving the impression they're getting a good deal, and that's what distinguishes it from actual or not. We'll have to see some of the implications of that. So then we started to try to question, what is the source? Are we talking about a Torah prohibition or something else? And we saw three possible sources for the Torah prohibition, maybe more. So one is the idea of Gneva, that maybe it means literally stealing, and the Tosefta suggests that, and some of the Rishonim, such as the Ritva and a number of others, attach it to Gneva, as the name indicates. And we said we have to keep our eyes open for what's being stolen. Is it that we're afraid the goodwill will lead him to give you something, and therefore you're stealing that in a roundabout way? Or is it that just the goodwill itself has value? That's also something we're going to have to try to figure out. Or is it just sheker? Is it a type of deception and therefore it's included midvar sheker terchak? We're not allowed to be dishonest about anything. Or is it a part of yahavta l'reicha kamocha, a general extension of that idea? We also mentioned the possibility that it's the prohibition in Parshas Bahar of Onos Devarim, because it would parallel Onos Mamo, that Onos Mamon, I give you a little bit but take more than I deserve monetarily. Here I'm giving you a little bit but taking more than I deserve emotionally. Or some say it's Drabanan, and we assume that it doesn't mean the whole issue is Drabanan. Clearly there are Yisurim Dareis involved here also, but maybe there are some rabbinic extensions that we might be talking about in some of these examples. So what do we have to figure out next? We have to figure out what difference it would make if you categorize it one way or another. How does that affect the halacha? And we'll see it's going to affect the exceptions. The Gemara mentions two or three exceptions that we skipped over. We'll come back to see how those might apply. And that may shed some light also on what we're talking about here. Okay, any questions? Everything clear? Everything makes sense? Okay, any questions, please don't hold back. And so God willing, we'll pick up with this 11 o'clock tomorrow. I should also mention, I meant to say at the beginning, tomorrow after that, after the shiur time, there will be a azkara for Rabbi Dr. Lam, Zichrono Livracha. We have to keep him in mind today. He was the guiding force of our institution for so many decades and an enormous influence on so many hundreds of rabbis and rebbeim and Rosh Yeshiva that we're connected to. A man of tremendous stature and wisdom and intellect and Torah, and somebody who was a guide and a mentor to me personally, and somebody who did so much to put his stamp on our yeshiva and on the entire contemporary rabbinate. So keep him in mind this week as we learn in his institution. And tomorrow, 12:30 or 1 o'clock, there is azkara for him, so that's afterwards. But first, you meet at 11, and we'll pick up with those issues. And again, those of you who I haven't met in person, if you can reach out, we'll find the time to try to connect. That would be fantastic. Okay, I wish you all a wonderful day. You should stay safe and healthy, and should be only good things.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Kol tov.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.